From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Labor Day weekend 2021. The first of three weekends to kick off Summerfest is underway, and the Brewers welcome the Cardinals to town for an important three-game series. Let's start with a man who's out on probation for a drug offense. Accidentally texted his probation officer looking to buy more drugs. Let's just say he's not on probation anymore. We all know that Canadians, including the cops, are the nicest, most polite people on the planet. Well, the Ontario police have been requesting that criminals not flush drugs down the toilet. Apparently, it clogs the pipes. I think they might be confusing cocaine with Drano. This may be the strangest story of the day. Harvard's new chief chaplain is an atheist. Yep, the chief chaplain at Harvard is an atheist. Isn't that cool? Said no one ever. And in England, a guy walks into a pub and orders a bunch of drinks. He then sues the pub for not protecting him from another drunken customer. He wins the lawsuit and $5.5 million in damages. I'm going to put his lawyer on speed dial. And finally, our goofy and poor taste headline of the week comes from the Daily Echo newspaper in England. Stolen prosthetic arm discovered in a secondhand shop.
Oh.
On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Chris Evers, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you, Jason. A bit of a mixed week for markets. The Dow Jones down 0.2%, closing at 35,369. However, the S&P 500 up 0.6%, closing today at 45,36, and the NASDAQ up 1.5%, closing at 15,364. For the year, the NASDAQ now up 19.8%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 17.1%, and the broad S&P 500 up a whopping 22%. That's a quick look at the week and the year-to-date so far. You know, Joel, maybe a good place to start with some of the economic news this week. In particular, you know, it seems that there are continuing signs that the pandemic rages on, that the Delta variant is weighing somewhat heavily on some of the data that comes out.
That's right, Kyle. The big report today was the Labor Department report that we get every month, looking at employment and looking at unemployment, looking at jobs and whether people are working or not. And the number of jobs created in August was way much lower than expected. It was 235,000, which, you know, in most years is a pretty good clip, but it's, you know, we've had an average of 500 some a month, 1,000 a month this year so far. And in July, we had 1.1 million jobs added. So, and then keep in mind that these numbers came at the beginning of August. So, you know, the variant of the Delta variant of the COVID virus has actually taken off since then. So, you know, some of the numbers that we saw in there, though, were the restaurants and bars cut for like 42,000 jobs. That's the leisure and hospitality sector has been growing the most, in the last few months. And now they're cutting back a little. And they're still 10%, 1.7 million, I think it is, jobs below where they were in February of 2020.
And we saw some data in the ISM numbers suggesting that there's quite a bit of variability still, even going back to last year because of the pandemic, in terms of labor supply, materials supply, and manufacturers just trying to keep up with all the new demand they're seeing.
That's right. We've got the manufacturing numbers, and then we also have the service sector numbers. And the service sector numbers actually slowed down in August from what they had been doing. Now, both of those are still growing. So, I mean, overall, we still see the economy growing. We still see those, you know, 236,000 jobs, 35,000 jobs added in August. So that's a good thing. But there are these signs that things are slowing down. One of the other things that I wanted to note was that Well, yeah, in the ISM manufacturing report that the purchase managers who were interviewed were saying that their struggles are unprecedented. And so they're growing, and you know, that's because there's demand out there, which is fueling that economic growth, but they've got all these bottlenecks and shortages of materials, and the whole labor issue is difficult.
And we see that in the housing market as well, right? That there's been incredible demand, maybe a limited amount of supply, and housing prices continue to move higher.
That's right. And the National Association of Realtors came out with their pending home sales index this week. That's looking ahead at how sales are going. And that was down for the second month in a row. They're actually saying that they think that they're starting to see the market cool, which could help those prices. But it's another sign that, you know, the economy might be losing some steam.
And the Consumer Confidence Index, the thing I think we often point to, is a pretty good barometer for the direction the economy is headed. Typically a pretty good indicator of what consumer spending will look like, and consumer spending being 70% of our economy, it's a pretty closely watched measure, trending down as well.
Right, and Chris and I were having discussions about this earlier in the week, that, you know, those numbers don't always, you know, directly correlate with consumer spending, but the fact that people aren't feeling as rosy about the outlook for their finances, for the economy in general, you know, doesn't bode well. And the consumer confidence number this week from the Conference Board and last week from the University of Michigan both had, you know, pretty severe drops from the month before, and both were citing the concerns about the Delta variant.
Dave, I think, you know, we look at some of what's been mixed economic news recently. We look at the, I think, surge in the Delta variant cases. We look at, you know, more broadly some of the challenges we've had geopolitically. And then you juxtapose that with just how significant market gains have been year to date. We had the best return through the first 8 months of the year since 1997 for the S&P 500. How do you talk to investors about, a lot of reasons for fear, a lot of reasons that potentially volatility picks up, and I guess, put that within the thinking that, yeah, but the markets are still doing incredibly well. How do investors kind of justify those two thoughts at the same time?
I think it boils down to discipline, Kyle. I think at any point that I can remember, at least in recent history, this is a time where you get this feeling like the markets can't be beat, right? We have these periods, and we've seen this in the past, where you have periods where bad news is perceived as good news, and then you have periods of time in the markets where good news is perceived as good news. But recently it's been, we get a little bit of good news and markets go up, and we get a little bad news and markets go up, we've almost seated inside the same trading session. So it gives people this feeling, I think, that, you know, there is no downside. And that's why I think it's discipline is really the key, is even in a time where there's limited opportunities on the safe side of the portfolio to make a lot of money. And we know bonds have struggled, and you know, we're in a low interest rate environment. But it doesn't mean that you can just get caught up in this and throw caution to the wind and just put everything in. It's really a test, I believe, for investors at this point in time to stick to those plans and look at rebalancing when it's appropriate for you.
And of course, Chris, investors pretty poor track record of that discipline. When you look at measures of things like behavior gap, which looks at kind of what an investor's actual experience is versus what the return of a particular investment would be, on its own, if you just bought it and held it forever, not getting in and getting out, as so many investors are wont to do. Morningstar every year comes out with a study they call Mind the Gap, which looks at that behavior gap. Over the last 10 years, they're saying 1.7 percentage points annual difference between what investors actually got from their investments and what those investments themselves would have returned had you just bought them at the beginning of the period and held them till the end. You know, how do we as advisors, and more broadly, how do we as investors kind of think through what that means for us? And then I think more importantly, how do we navigate, you know, maybe trying to close that gap a little bit?
Yeah, I'll kind of save everybody the boredom of explaining how they go about figuring out where that 1.7% gap comes from, other than to say it's a matter of timing the market that investors try to do. So you know, they'll break it down actually, Morningstar, by asset classes, and we'll show what the behavior gap was for different asset classes. And a key finding was the more volatile the asset class, the more that asset class had wild returns, the higher the behavior gap, which implies investors, when market prices move around more aggressively, are more apt to either buy in when prices are up considerably or, on the reverse, sell after prices have slid considerably. Versus assets, you know, like shorter term bonds tended to have a smaller behavior gap because they're not jumping around in price as much. So investors are less likely to buy in and sell out at inopportune times. So I think the lesson there is, one, you have to be mindful of the fact that you're going to succumb to your own emotions at time of wanting to chase returns and wanting to sell out at the bottom because you have that fear, and go into that, you know, go into investing with that in mind. The second part is make that decision easier on yourself by giving yourself both, you know, maybe a little bit of dry powder so that you're never forced to sell out at the bottom, you know, having that emergency fund that we talk about from a planning perspective, so that if markets sell off, well, you got 6 months worth of cash in the bank and, you know, maybe it didn't earn you much, but now when the market's down 30%, you're not in a pinch where you have to sell stocks. Even though you don't want to, you have to. So I think those are some of the key things for investors to remind themselves, is to give them options and don't react to the prices as people tend to do. You know, it's a national human instinct to do that.
You know, I think we focus a lot in our profession in this particular field on kind of the math, right? That you know, we can calculate what we think something should be worth based on what cash flows are or based upon what a particular investment is paying. But it leaves out a really important part of, you know, actually being an investor, and that's the behavioral economic side of things. Now, you know, Daniel Kahneman, a fairly famous behavioral economist, has done a lot of research into kind of the idea of the fear of missing out, that investors are almost forced into reacting to things because they're concerned that if they don't act now, the decline that they're seeing already is going to turn into an even bigger decline. And this fear of loss or loss aversion, as Kahneman has put it in the past, is so significant, I think, that there's this, you know, this need almost to react. And so, you know, you point out rightfully that some of the biggest behavior gaps occur in the most volatile investments. We also see that some of the biggest behavior gaps occur in some of the most volatile times for investments, right? That even for investments that don't typically bounce around a lot, like your bond funds, we got a lot of calls earlier this year when interest rates were jumping sky high. Hey, what's going on with my bond fund? Why is it down 2 or 3%? Yeah, that doesn't seem all that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things, but it's a big deal for bonds. And so I think even for investments that otherwise aren't that volatile, you know, we do need to be sensitive to that fact. And I think, you know, Dave, we put kind of the thoughts that you had earlier together about, you know, how the market can still be as strong as it is in the face of all of that danger and in the face of all that potential volatility, and add in kind of some of the thoughts from Morningstar that Chris shared. And I think you've got a nice case study in why balance is so important, why you need to be able to buy yourself the time and buy yourself the courage to get through some of that volatility. And that's ultimately, you know, I think what we do every day is talk to investors about the importance of balance.
And, you know, I think that, you know, you talk about fear of missing out as being one of those things that can try to entice people away from that balance. There's also something that's called, that we refer to as TINA, which is you feel like there is no alternative. And I think that's a big part of what we're experiencing today. You know, with bond yields as low as they are, it's difficult for investors to just commit to that, knowing that, okay, I'm buying this thing and I'm not going to make a lot of money. And meanwhile, the stock market continues to go up. And it's hard for people to do that. So you're right. This is a time in which that emotional and psychological aspects of investing are really tested. So, you know, again, get back to that plan and stick to it.
I think on that FOMO or TINA front, you know, we got news this week from Social Security that payments from Social Security are finally exceeding the receipts from those people paying in, and they've moved up when when Social Security's coffers will be run dry a whole year to 2034. And so I think many investors kind of at that point of claiming or near that point of claiming Social Security might have that fear of missing out, right? That Social Security is not going to be around anymore, that things are going to change drastically. And so I better claim it now, Chris, I know you've done a lot of work with clients kind of trying to understand the benefits of waiting to claim Social Security. How much do the headlines this week really change the math, or how much of it is more just a, hey, this is something we have to watch, but maybe nothing has changed quite yet?
Yeah, Kyle, the headline isn't a fun one to read. You know, you read that headline, and I think, you know, regarding Social Security, and you're tempted to say, well, goodness, you know, do I have to worry that Social Security is going to be there in 10 years for me? One, you know, the actual story is not as bleak as what the headline would leave you to believe. You know, Social Security, you know, will be able to make payments out. They're just saying that there's going to be changes that need to be taken, you know, either in terms of increased revenue or, you know, reducing at some point down the road what that payment is, whether it's a later year to claim. But I think a lot of individuals have this temptation to think, you know, I paid into Social Security for all these years. You know, doggone it, I'm going to get my money out of that system, and I'm not going to be, you know, the sucker, so to speak, that you never claimed and never received that money. You know, I think it's important to sit down with your advisor and go through the math of, hey, if I delay Social Security these couple of years and I get that bigger benefit, you know, what does that mean to me from my monthly, you know, budget by waiting for that, you know, larger security payment? Also, you know, if I'm still working, you know, do I really need to claim Social Security at that point? Should I be considering delaying so that I can continue to get that bigger benefit? It's, you know, I don't want people to make a, you know, quick decision just based on they read some headline and say, oh God, Social Security is going away. I got to, you know, make a run on the bank, so to speak, and claim my Social Security as quickly as I can so I can get a payment. So, you know, take a deep breath, talk to your advisor, read the actual details of what's going on in the Social Security system, and don't just rush to a judgment based on, you know, a scary headline that's out there right now.
Yeah, Chris, my impression of those headlines is that, I mean, every year we see the report and we see the headlines and they're always alarmist. And you know, at some point Congress has to do something. And, you know, right now, the 2032 elections probably is when this will be addressed. but I mean, you know, and that's being cynical, but I mean, sooner or later something's going to happen. But I think that's the wise thing to do, is just to sort of take those headlines with a grain of salt and then, you know, sit down with your advisor and say, what does this mean to me, and how do I plan for this?
And we'll talk about it every year, won't we, Joel, until 2032, I imagine.
You know, I mean, and sometimes there's good, you know, raising alarms if people come rushing to people who have more information and have their best interest, you know, at heart and can help them think it through.
Well, and I think that's really the point, right, is that if those headlines at least start the conversation, a conversation that may not have otherwise happened, yeah, maybe it starts on kind of a scary note, right, of, okay, there's something wrong with Social Security, but maybe it ends with an individual making a better decision than they otherwise would have about when to claim Social Security. So while sometimes it's a little frustrating to see the way some things are communicated in you know, the popular press, I think, you know, at the same time, if we can get better about having those conversations, you know, there's a benefit to that. You know, Joel, we had a piece going out today in the newsletter on the potential increase in Social Security based on cost of living adjustments for next year. Some of that may be part of the problem as to why Social Security's got to pay a little more. But also, if you're claiming Social Security or claiming it soon, that increase is going to be significant for you.
Right, Kyle. I mean, you know, one of the upsides, I mean, people are concerned about inflation, but one of the upsides of inflation is that, you know, to the degree that it pushes up the consumer price index, it helps retirees who are receiving Social Security, you know, based on, you know, just looking at the first month with the COLA, as they call it, the cost of living adjustment, is based on the third quarter consumer price index. So we've got one of those 3 months data in already, and just looking at the first month, you know, just judging from that, it would seem that you know, Social Security recipients are in line for maybe the highest increase that they've had in a decade, in more than a decade. It could be upward toward 6%.
And maybe a bit of bittersweet news in the newsletter with the announcement of the retirement of our longtime and well-loved receptionist, Lisa. I think many of our listeners are going to be sad to not hear her voice when the phone is answered when they're dialing in, or to not see her when they're back in the office. But you did an excellent job of kind of capturing what her plans are, kind of the the interesting first few days of retirement for her, dealing with some power outages. And I thought it was just a really good way to send her off.
Thanks. I can't, you know, do her justice, but it's you know, more bitter for us than and sweet for Lisa. But it's interesting having someone working at a place that helps people through retirement. So in her 13 years here, she's seen people get to the point where they can, you know, afford and enjoy retirement, and we're glad that she's doing that. And she's you can read all about it, but she's, you know, reinvigorating her pretty outstanding music career.
If you aren't subscribed to our newsletter, I encourage you to contact your advisor or go to our website to get signed up. I think, you know, we do try to do a good job of staying on top of what's in the news, try to do a good job of staying on top of, you know, the things that we think are really important for clients to know. And, you know, I think it's fun to put together, obviously, every month. But on top of that, I think it's good to get feedback from it, good to see kind of people, what people are clicking on to give us an idea, too, of, you know, how we can better help our clients, help our investors. A quick reminder that next week is a shortened trading week with Labor Day. You know, I think with all the labor market reports that we've been focusing on, important to remember kind of the importance, at least, of that one day off to start kind of the beginning of fall here. And we'll be back at it next week, Tuesday. We really appreciate you listening to the program. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.